The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA. And KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I believe I'll have my associate Dan DuBose joining us here shortly on the phone, as usual. And it is the first day of January 2023. That seems strange to be saying that already. And I guess, as with most New Years, we all have our plans and ambitions and objectives, and I guess depending on how disciplined one is, you may or may not last long. And I know lots of resolutions taking place as you listen to the New Year's shows here over the last few days, and I'm not sure that I've got any resolutions other than to keep doing what we've been doing, which is show up every week and continue to help people understand what they're signing up for when they invest in real estate, specifically in real estate private partnership syndications, or what we call REPs. And for those of you that have been listening to us for the last just over 2 years now, it's hard to believe that we started the Be a Planner Show 2 years ago, and here very soon we're going to be expanding the show out across the country. We've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 to maybe as many as 8 stations that we anticipate adding an hour to. And we're excited about the prospects. The planets seem to have aligned for what we do in this asset space. And unfortunately, most of the information that you're going to get is by those that are trying to sell you a membership in an old school type platform with all sorts of promises about shiny new partnership objects that, for whatever reason, their flavor's going to eliminate some of the ills and issues that every real estate partnership has. And I would just suggest to you that get your sales motivation from whoever you care to get your sales motivation from. But when it comes to tax advice and math advice as to new partnership opportunities, you might want to separate that from the folks that are trying to sell you memberships. And, you know, we have no problem telling you when the math makes sense or when it doesn't, and based on your specific objectives. So in any event, you know, I hope that as you go through the year and you consider, if you're not already in this investment space, you take a look at it, because I don't know of any others that I could direct you to that give you the odds or the success factors that real estate private partnerships do, specifically those involving multifamily apartment buildings. And that's the gist of our focus. It's not that we don't appreciate office buildings, hotels, industrial facilities, etc. We certainly do. It's just that the multifamily market is where I would suggest the low-hanging fruit is, that allows normal people, common everyday lay people that have some retirement savings socked away. And we'll talk about how to invest those retirement savings. I know from some of the emails I get and questions after the show each week that a lot of people, in spite of the fact that we talk about this almost every week, what I tend to lose sight of at times is that there's new listeners every week. And, you know, when you've not heard the show before and you haven't heard us refer to a postnuptial agreement, or the legal term being quadro, a qualified domestic relations order, you're not aware that you can unlock access to what is most Americans' most significant investment capital, which would be their 401k or IRA accounts. And unfortunately, if you call your HR department at your employer, the odds are that when you ask, well, how can I access my 401 funds to invest in real estate private partnerships? I hear this CPA on the air every week talking about how he has clients that have invested their 401k assets into apartments. And apartments historically have generated above average returns, would be the term that I would apply. No guarantees. I don't sell apartments, by the way. When you hear Dan Dubose and I talk about investing in apartments, Dan, you are on the line now, correct?
I'm here.
Okay, great. We are not salespeople for syndicators, even some of whom you may, and you're going to hear more as we expand the show. We'll interview the lead partners or the syndicators, the sponsors. That term typically refers to the same role, so that you can understand the different approaches, the different styles of some of the folks that are out there that are selling partnership interest. But we do not. We're independent. We do invest occasionally in certain transactions, which I'll fully disclose anytime that happens before we consult with you, if you are someone that we consult with. And if you're not, just understand that, hey, we like a transaction for more than just our prospects and clients. You know, we too have a retirement future that we need to be concerned about, and we like transactions for certain reasons, the same reasons that we may explain the math to you. We understand the same math for ourselves if it fits, and so we do eat our own dog food, quote unquote, from time to time, and we like this asset space. Dan, what's going on in the news? We had a big occurrence or event here in the last week or so. I think it was just before Christmas that the president signed the monstrosity of an omnibus bill, which also had some retirement plan impact. You want to talk a little bit about the SECURE Act 2.0?
Yeah, they're calling it SECURE 2.0. It has some far-reaching, I believe it is, the words they're using, retirement planning strategies that can be set up or will be effective, somewhat delayed. I think some of them are coming in the year 24, 25 maybe. One of the important things, I believe, is the increase in the required minimum distribution age going up to as high as 75. Beginning, I believe it is in 25 or 26, or it depends on your age level. It's your birth date. It's I think significant change making, particularly with the clients that we see, was, you know, fairly significant IRAs or 401ks that need to be converted to those Roth accounts. It gives us a little longer time to get that planned out too.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, one of the biggest changes that I see, and, you know, this helps us on some of the strategies that we try to use, is the not having to take RMDs pre-death anymore from the 401k. Did you catch that, Dan, when you were reading through that new act? That's a big deal. I mean, not that there's not other ways around it. I mean, there's nobody, when it's your own company plan, you know, when you've got some self-employment activity, which we have to have to use the 401 trust. It's up to you as to when you stop working, because that heretofore would be the way that you would defer or delay the RMDs. You know, as long as you're still working, even if it's for yourself, although there are some limitations on that. I shouldn't make it sound like that was the be-all, end-all. But certainly this rule change is, it appears to me. And again, the regs haven't been written yet. And as we've learned, Dan, the real proof is in the regs as they come out later. And I'm not sure how long that'll be. I know the Secure Act, we just got the regs about a year ago. So what was that, after 2 years or 3 years? Which that's actually pretty fast. So anyway, what else was there? There's multiple provisions that could be a big deal, you know, depending on your circumstance, depending on who you work for, depending on which options that your employer chooses to include in your plan. But you have some of the other bullets handy, Dan?
No, but I can dig something out, Nate.
Well, let's talk about a few of the changes. The catch-up, I'm going to try to – I mean, there are a lot of changes, actually. I don't think we'll go through all of them because I'd like to save a little time, if we have it, to talk about at least one transaction that's out there that we had a client send us this week to take a look at. But – the catch up to 10,000 from, I believe, what's the current level? Is it 7,000, 6,500? So that could be significant. Depends on your age. There are some requirements there that I have to admit, reading through it, I think it confused me more than it enlightened me. But Dan, if I understand, the higher catch up contribution limit issue is, you know, now if you're 50 or older, you can make catch-up contributions within certain limits. And I think, as Dan pointed out, it's currently 6,500, if I recall correctly. And so let's see, the Secure Act 2.0 increases those limits beginning in 2025 to the greater of $10,000 or 50% more than the regular catch-up amount if you're 60, 61, 62, or 63. After those, or after 2025, those amounts will be indexed for inflation. So that's a pretty significant bump in the catch-up. And I know it seems like most of the people that we work with are behind on retirement savings. And by the way, you know, that may fit your situation. If you're listening and perhaps you're not just interested in investing in real estate, private partnerships, you're behind the eight ball, as most Americans are. You know, it depends on which author or which magazine, et cetera, you want to believe, but the large majority of Americans are behind on what they need for retirement. And even the ones that think they got it whipped, you know, I mean, Dan, how many people do you know that have $2 or $3 million in retirement and that's what they tell you they have if you ask them, how much do you have? And I'm sure you hear it as often as I do. Well, you know, I've got it covered. You know, I'm self-insured. It's the term that I hear. And I'm just curious, Dan, how much, if you've got, let's say you're at the higher end of that strata, you've showed up every day at an employer, a large employer, maybe you're an engineer or you know, oil and gas, a geologist. We got a lot of those in the Houston area. And you just did the normal. Yeah, you showed up, did your job, made your maximum 401 contribution, and you had a little luck in the market, maybe not going back to the Fidelity Magellan days, although we do have a client that managed to time Fidelity Magellan, right? The guy was a professor, a teacher, and ended up with multiple $1 million because Magellan went nuts, you know, back in the, what, 70s, I guess, Dan, if I remember right, 70s or 80s. And but all that money's sitting in pre-tax 401 accounts or IRA accounts. What does that mean, Dan? What's the reality for people that are in that particular situation?
It means a really, really high RMD, but it also means a really high tax that's going to be paid or due.
It's a double whammy, isn't it?
A double whammy.
It really is. And you know, all you can hope for is, well, there's two things you can hope for. One, you can work on converting over to the Roth side of the house, which is what we're doing with multiple clients here at year end. And we like to optimize. We never suggest that you convert all of your funds, although, you know, I know people that are in the higher bracket to where they really, they might as well, you know, depending on how much of a gambler they are in terms of when the rates will go up. By the way, are the rates going to go up, Dan? Thought I'd catch you off guard a little bit here early.
No, rates are going up, sir. There is no doubt about it. I think they're going up.
And since you're, well, you are a Republican, I think you have to actually admit to it since you're on the GOP county team, I guess you would call it. That's probably the wrong word. But bottom line is, it doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. Why are the rates going to go up, Dan? Why can I very confidently sit here today for probably only in the recent past as a 37-year, or actually this will be the 38th years of practicing CPA, why do I believe in my heart of hearts for the first time that the rates are in fact going up in my lifetime?
Because this country owes $33 trillion in debt, plus it has unfunded liabilities of, what, $175 trillion now, maybe
well,
$100.
Unfunded and unrecorded would be the key. And it depends on who you read, who you believe, but it's somewhere in the, well, I don't know, I've seen estimates anywhere from $150 trillion to $250 trillion. And we're talking about what we would refer to as the true deficit, not the one that gets bannered about in the media or within the halls of Congress where they talk about this $33 trillion level. It just went up, I guess, a trillion. Is that due to the latest tax act, Dan, or did that have something to do with prior acts? I've lost track this year how many we've done, but
well, you know, it's going to go up a trillion just because of the interest it costs to carry that amount of money these days. So, you know, with the treasury bill rates or the treasury rates going up, as well as all the other interest rates that we see, you know, it's going to cost the government I think we calculated one day at least $1 trillion just to carry the debt that it has. That's not even paying down any of it. Yeah, that's just to pay the interest on it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so, you know, what do you do, you know, if you're in this particular situation where, you know, all of a sudden when you look at your retirement accounts, you know, you say, well, you know, I've got $3 million or I've got $300,000, as the case may be. A lot of the folks that come to us have much lower amounts, and so that will impact them even more dramatically.
Yes.
As they start paying the tax when they take those funds out. And it's not just the income tax that catches people. It's also the fact that their Social Security will tend to be taxable if they have much in retirement wealth when those RMDs kick in. Why is that, Dan? Why are some people, you know, we've got clients that make, I don't know, what, $30,000 to $50,000 a year in Social Security, and many of them pay no tax, and yet others...
Up to $44,000 of what's called modified adjustment gross income, you can not pay any tax if you plan your payout from your IRA or your Roth. You know, from if you plan it, you can get it to where you actually have a near zero tax.
Yeah, so
what we'd love to get to.
Yeah, so if I've got pre-tax funds in my 401 or my IRA that are subject to RMDs. Do the RMDs count in that calculation? We refer to the provisional income brackets where we might or might not be subject to tax. How do the different types of retirement funds apply there, Dan?
Well, half of your Social Security is added to whatever income, whatever your adjusted gross income is, and to determine your modified adjusted gross income, it could cause your Social Security to be taxed at up to 85% of your Social Security be taxed at whatever tax rate you are in that particular year, effectively. It's a calculation that you might be able to control going forward, once you're into the retirement where you're taking your money out of your retirement plan, IRA, 401k.
Yeah, and that's on an annual basis. So,
on this annual.
Yeah, right. So you might be a successful real estate investor, as an example, where 1 year you're not paying any tax on your Social Security because you don't have any taxable income streams or taxable income being reported from a K-1, let's say, on a apartment building that you're an owner in, unless maybe it's sold, and in which case you could have some taxable income. Of course, what would we likely be looking to do in that situation, Dan, if we had a client that told us, we're anticipating as a partnership selling that asset, how do I avoid paying tax on that? What's one of the ways?
We reinvest and we get us another deal.
That's exactly right.
We're constantly looking for another deal.
That's right. And we're not necessarily, we're rarely talking about doing a 1031 or tax-free exchange because most of the private partnership interests are not qualified assets for that. So we're looking to find new transactions that have significant fixed asset rehab projects that generate additional depreciation. There is a reduction starting here in 2023 to the amount that heretofore for, I guess, the last, 5 years, Dan, or 4 years, we've been able to claim the bonus depreciation for even secondhand or used real estate. That was a big, big change that the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, otherwise known as the Trump tax cut, put in play. And for the first time, we got to apply those tangible bonus depreciation rules to secondhand or to used real estate. Big deal. And so that starts to phase out this year. I believe we lose 20%, if memory serves. Still pretty attractive. I know we've had clients that would invest $100,000 and literally get $100,000 or close to it in first-year write-offs. That will go a long way towards reducing or eliminating tax on a gain. Of course, it depends on how much we're talking about. And then, of course, we might have some carryover losses from prior transactions. That'd be the other way that we take advantage of the rules to be able to reduce the tax that might be due. Speaking of taking advantage of the rules and news, did you get a chance to read any of the, hundreds if not thousands of articles over the last week or two about Donald Trump's tax returns? Any surprises there, Dan?
I haven't seen it. I hadn't heard any talk about it. I had my head buried in so much stuff. I haven't seen it. I'd be interested to look at it, though.
They actually
exposed his tax return?
Yeah, they did. The committee that need, I forget which committee in Congress, they just had to have it because they were trying to review, I guess, legislation or the need for more legislation. I mean, it's such a crock. But bottom line, I think it's what I predicted years ago since Trump has been president. Give him the returns. He knew what he was doing. He was toying with them. It's like, my son and I had some seafood last night, and he's looking up at the wall at this huge mounted I'm not sure what it was. It was a blue something, you know, I guess a swordfish of some sort. And he said, you know, Papa, is that real? I mean, he's never seen a fish like that, at least not in person. And I said, yeah, and, you know, a fish like that, you might have to work him and tire him out over half a day, you know, before you'll be able to pull him into the boat. Well, I get the feeling that's basically what Trump has done with these tax returns, because as you and I both know, Dan, you could have the tax returns, and in some cases, the guy that prepared them sitting in front of you, and you still might not be able to recall all the ins and outs and to understand what's really going on. And a tax return does not, in and of itself, tell you necessarily what one's net worth is, right? I mean, the tax rules are different than the generally accepted accounting principles. And even those rules might not necessarily give you the insight you need into cost basis, et cetera, you know, for understanding what someone's wealth is. But the media is so fixated on, you know, figuring something out that Trump hasn't told us, and proving, I guess, one way or the other, that he either is a billionaire or he's not a billionaire. And I'm just curious, Dan, you know, as CPAs, and we're not auditors, to be clear, so we don't maybe have some of the generally accepted accounting principles in our wheelhouse. But bottom line is, are there different ways of valuing one's assets?
Yeah, of course there is.
Right. And depending on whether you're doing it for an election report or maybe, which, by the way, have very wide values, as I understand it. I've never filled out a campaign report, but I can tell you that, you know, the ones that I've seen news articles about refer to categories of assets more than a specific asset. So unless you had insights into a given person that was running for office, I guess, to know, well, let's assume they own one office building. Well, then I guess maybe you could drill down on that category for that candidate and figure out what something might be worth. Or you could go look at the local appraisal district records. But even then, does the Houston or Harris County appraisal district, Dan, are they the be all end all when it comes to value? If you want to buy a piece of real estate, do you go look and see what HCAD has it for, so you know how much to offer the person that owns it? I mean, is that how?
Well,
it
I'm
works?
Probably going to hire a real pro to figure that out before I spend that $20 million on something.
Well, that, and I'm just curious, how many people do you know? I know a lot that have never once in their life appealed the value that an appraisal district puts on their property. I'm sure you know many people as well like that. And so how does the appraisal district determine what something's worth, right? I mean, they have their computerized models. They get information, I guess, however they get it when something sells. Different counties, different states have different rules. But I know, or at least I think in Texas, I'm under no compulsion to report how much I sold a piece of real estate for, at least to the county or the state, right? And so all I'm trying to tell you is that when the people that are going crazy right now, they worked themselves into a tizzy because they wanted Trump's tax returns. I don't know about you, but it seemed to me like Congress had kind of moved on by the time that the returns came out. And it's like you said, you weren't even aware. Now, truthfully, you and I not being aware is a little different because we got our heads down trying to get stuff done for clients here by the 12/31 deadline, which I'm happy to report we were able to do, or at least that I'm aware of, the ones that had a trigger for 12/31. But, you know, in any event, I don't think that anybody got much. And I guess all I would say when I ask you if you learned anything, I'm amazed that Trump paid as much tax as he did. And I'll just fill you in, Dan, since you didn't see it. There were years where he paid more than $1.38 in taxes, which is what you would believe if you read the news stories that have been out forever about him and his tax returns. And, you know, the real estate sector, as you know, for investors, operators, et cetera, is still one of the best possible ways to generate cash flow is with real estate. Because as we both know, cash flow in and of itself is not taxable. And so there's a high likelihood or high probability that one can generate cash flow that doesn't get taxed in the current year. And when you see somebody like Trump that actually got taxed, that would typically mean they generated even more cash flow, and it came from things that might not be deductible. I believe, if I remember right, he paid taxes on royalties, things of that nature that didn't quite have an offset, per se. I tell you what, we're halfway through today's show. Let's go ahead and take a short break, and we'll come back in a few minutes with more of the Be a Planner show. I'll pick up my discussion with Dan Dubose, CPA, about private partnership investments in multifamily assets.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. And I hope that will tell me, well done, my child. You've won your reward through your sacrifice. Your sacrifice.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I'm here speaking once again with Dan Dubose, CPA, and we're talking about topics near and dear to our heart, which is how to save money on taxes, especially as related to investing in real estate private partnership syndications. And right now, with everything that's going on inflation-wise, which unfortunately bleeds over into tax brackets and tax rates, and everything's getting more expensive, and not necessarily just because of inflation. You know, the tax brackets are going to go up. Why, Dan? Because we're out of money, correct? And
well, if we're not out of money yet, we're going to be out by 2030, most of the big boys say. So yeah. It's going to be... it's pretty near.
Yeah, that then or sooner, depending on this inflation. By the way, do we think the Fed's anywhere near close to being done on raising interest rates and making it harder for all of us to live?
Yeah, many people are talking about a 6% max out on what they're planning to do, but who knows? It's still up in there very much so, I think. You know, one big guy says, one of the big talkers says they're going to stop. Another guy says it's going to go another 0.5%. I mean, it's all over the board, but we know it's going up. It's going to go up, maybe not to nearly what it did in 22, but it will go up.
Boy, I think if it only went up another 0.5%, you'd hear a collective sigh of relief. I don't hear that sigh of relief. And I know in the real estate business, you know, I have clients and prospects that I speak with every week. And, you know, now for I don't know how long I keep hearing this refrain that, well, you know, when once my 401k accounts recover, then I'm going to make a move over into real estate. And I usually explain, well, you know, the real estate market has not been decimated. Why not use the real estate market to get your 401k amounts back that probably aren't coming back for a while? And even if they do, it's a constant cycle of up and down, up and down. When do you take the plunge again, right? Or when do you execute whatever strategy you think you've got that, you know, nobody else is aware of? I've asked a lot of people, just more facetiously than anything, when their 401 will have recovered. And most people have lost track of what the loss is, right? Because it's been up and down, up and down. And, you know, I would suggest, hey, take a look at investing in what I would refer to as a value-add opportunity. It's an opportunity where, you know, there's an apartment building for sale that for whatever reason has rent rates currently under market, where the property can be improved, the rental rates can be increased, therefore the net operating income on the property can be increased, which then leads to the opportunity to refinance and pull a piece of your original investment out. That's the strategy that we've seen executed time and time and time again, and it still is executed throughout all of the COVID issues that put a lot of other industries and businesses out of business, and yet we've still got clients that are, including ourselves, that are invested in transactions that are making money and have gains, and we go into new transactions that theoretically will execute the same strategy, the value add strategy of finding assets that are under market. And lest you think that the sellers in today's market are just fat and happy and just loving life as they raise the rate that they would sell a property for, don't forget those guys are under the gun as well in terms of having to refinance their existing properties. You know, it's very common with commercial real estate loans that the term is not necessarily 30 years. The amortization term may be 30 years, but the debt itself may be there's a ton of three-year bridge debt that's out there right now that either is interest only or it has principal and interest terms, but there's a three-year trigger on having to either extend at a 1% extension fee, which, you know, on a $100 million loan is $1 million. It's a lot of money that could have gone to partners. So you've got owners that need to sell, and you've got buyers that want to buy, and it's this dance, if you will, that we go through to try to figure out who's telling the truth. It's like, put your cards out on the table and let's see, you know, what kind of deal we can cut, because we want to buy and you guys need to sell. Or maybe come to the table with some money. It's like, Dan, if you did a loan 3 years ago or 4 years ago, maybe a little bit less, what kind of loan to value do you think you had on those loans?
Well, probably as high as 65% loan.
Well, I would think back then you probably had 80. 80 was very common back 3 or 4 years ago, right? So if you're sitting here now thinking you need, well, not thinking, you know you need to refinance, now you'd be lucky to get a 65% LTV. You're probably going to end up with 50 to 55 if it's like most that we see. I've seen some that were sub 50. And when you think about that, Might that have a little impact on your ability to sell an asset as well? It's not just refinance. Why would it matter if you're trying to sell it? You think buyers just have all this cash amassed to where they don't care if they get a 70% LTV versus a 55 or a 45? I think it does matter. And I think that that's therein lies the opportunity for folks that are thinking that the market's going to be stagnant. I don't think the market's going to be stagnant at all. I think there's buyers sitting on the sideline with enough cash to come into a deal where they have to put more down, bring more equity to the table, which will obviously impact returns. But when you look at the relative desirability of an apartment building a return, even now, versus the returns in the market, still pretty attractive, wouldn't you say, Dan?
Very much so when you compare it to the other market, the stock market or the bond market, for sure.
Yeah, and then let's combine whatever investment return success we might have with maybe marrying up a Roth conversion. And that may seem like an odd combination, but let's talk about that for a minute, Dan. If I've got my money parked at Schwab, for example, or UBS or Fidelity, and I've got, let's call it, $1 million sitting in the bank or in their accounts, market-based accounts, what's the value each day? What do we look at to determine the value where if we were to execute a Roth conversion, that essentially would become our taxable base to calculate the Roth conversion tax on? How do we determine that, Dan?
You're talking about the market?
End of business. Look at the where'd your stock end up? Where'd your mutual fund, your index funds, et cetera, end up today? So if you end up at $1,122,000, there's, if you are thinking you want to convert all of it, which you probably shouldn't, but for sake of this illustration, let's assume that. Well, then there's your number. Multiply that times the tax bracket you end up in, which would be the top bracket if it were that high, and that's what you pay your tax on. Conversely, what if we had worked with you to do a rollover of your 401 funds, and even in the great state of Texas, if you're married and you're desirous of taking control of your retirement accounts without being 59 and a half and without terminating or severing from your employer, you have an option to access those funds, and we'll show you how to do it. And so given then that you control where the funds are invested, when, how much, in what assets, et cetera, now you've got your money rolled over into a self-directed model of a 401. Presuming you qualify, you do need some self-employment income, which we can show you assorted options that are out there if you even need us to. You can also go to any one of a number of websites these days that show you some side gig type opportunities that you might avail yourself of. And provided you qualify, then you would have the ability to roll your money out of the big company plan, even while you're employed. The employer has no say-so in the matter. You'd have the ability to roll your funds over to a self-directed 401 model where, again, you determine who, when, where, and how much to invest. And now that your money is invested in private companies or private real estate partnerships, all of a sudden you've got assorted risk factors that you need to consider. And if you think it's just Nathan Ross explaining this to you, no, it's the SEC. Go look at the private placement memorandum on every transaction you might invest in, and you will see a list of 20 to 25, at least in the real estate sector, 25 risk factors that you should consider according to the SEC. Because that investment is no longer invested in Exxon stock or Apple stock. Not that you don't have risk with those. Just look at the market and tell me you don't have risk with those options when you look at how the market goes up and down on a daily basis. But truthfully, when you've got a private company investment, is it as liquid, Dan? Can I go sell that investment in that apartment building anytime I'd like to?
Most of the time, absolutely not.
Right. Tells you right in the operating agreement and right in the private placement memorandum that you will not be able to sell this investment. Who decides when to sell it, Dan, typically?
Sponsor, the lead person.
Right, and is the sponsor someone like Apple might have running Apple Corporation, where they're, you know, layer upon layer of skilled financial and operational professionals, or is it maybe one or two people that buy apartments and raise money from friends and family or from private real estate syndications?
Yes, it's the latter. You know, it's the one or two guys that are together, or maybe a husband and wife even.
Yeah, that maybe join with, you know, 80 or 90 or 120 other people that have, you know, 100,000 to 300,000 or so to invest, and they're going to put their money together, and the one, the sponsor, the syndicator, the lead partner, whatever you want to call those one or two people, or maybe eight. I mean, you know, obviously each operator is a little bit different, but the bottom line is it's not necessarily a professional set of corporate managers. It could be some ex Apple executives or whoever. You pick your flavor. It varies widely, but bottom line is typically that's a risk factor that the SEC wants you to consider before you put your 100 or 300 or whatever amount you're thinking about in those, you know, 100,000, 300,000, et cetera, into these transactions. It might be a $100 million transaction, and you're just a small piece. You're 0.007, you know, maybe of 1%. And so bottom line is you've got risk, and there's a list of 20 to 25 of them in most PPM documents or private placement memorandums. And for those of you that have invested already, you know what I'm referring to, and you can go look at those documents, usually towards the top of the PPM, and see those risk factors discussed. And you know, for those of you that are kind of getting a little bit anxious right now or queasy because you didn't realize there's risk in life in general, much less in investments, have you ever bought a home yourself? Have you ever looked at the disclosures that are on that set of documents for that transaction? You may be surprised to learn that buying your own home is a risky endeavor. Correct, Dan?
That's right. It's a risky endeavor.
Does your home always go up in value, Dan?
Well, unfortunately, mine have, but, you know, it's not always. We've seen some here lately. We've seen quite an increase in the bankruptcy or in the, you know, loss in value just because we had such a high purchase rate back when the interest rates were, what, 2.25%? You know, people were just buying these houses at inflated cost, I believe. So we're going to see a bit of a bite here.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, I would tell you that, many indicators are pointed down, although it depends on where you're at. You know, I was in Austin last week and talking to a prospect, and, you know, Austin is not Houston when it comes to the cost of real estate. That said, things have slowed a bit, nothing like what we've seen here in Houston. But bottom line is there's still transactions happening, and there always has been. You know, you and I go back to the infamous mid-80s here in Houston, and there were people that made a lot of money in 1985, just like there were a lot of companies that went under. Unfortunately, there were real estate developers committing suicide back then, because of the impact on them in the market. And so, you know, you've got people making money and losing money in all markets, whether, you know, it's good or bad or I would say indifferent. Understanding what you're buying, and in this case with real estate private partnerships, understanding what you're signing up for. What are your objectives? What are the expectations of even the pro forma information on a particular opportunity? Like one we're going to discuss just briefly here today, Dan. I've got the deal highlights for this apartment complex in Florida. It's a Florida opportunity. But I just want to point out, these are the kind of transactions that we review for clients to figure out, hey, do you understand what this potential opportunity offers? And how does that sync up with your objectives? And, you know, this, I'll let you talk a little bit about, start with the sponsorship, Dan. What's the background of this particular opportunity?
These people have in their publication show like $3 trillion. I'm sorry, I got that $3 trillion on my mind. $3 billion worth of transactions over the last 10 years or so. So, you know, this is not a pure mom and pop operation. This is a significant sponsor, I believe, that you could really look to deliver on a product.
Yeah, but it is family owned and operated. 42 years. That's quite a, since 1980. Almost as old as us, right, Dan?
Almost.
And 140,000 units managed over the course of their history, 13,000 plus currently managed across 12 states. I'm reading, at least in this spot, $4.7 billion worth of transactions just since 2008. This is an experienced operator through multiple real estate cycles, and including, and it's rare that I see a developer actually mention this, because a few of them go back this far, right? The 1986 tax law change, that was significant. If you were in business in 1980 doing these types of transactions, you're lucky to be able to talk about it. You're still alive, in other words, right? And then you come on up to the 2001 dot-com crash, the 2008 recession, and now the 2020 pandemic. These guys, to use the expression I use all the time, they've been shot at. I like doing business with people that have been shot at. I like walking onto a United plane as I'm coming back and forth to my second home in Thailand, and I like to see those white-haired guys in the cockpit. Because that tells me they dealt with adversity, and at least in the case of a pilot, they're batting 1,000, right, Dan? Or they wouldn't be there. So, you know, now with real estate, I'm not so sure I would ascribe a batting 1,000, but I'll tell you, if you've been through what these guys have been through, at least according to their bio, that says something. And with regard to the platform that they're on, this is a CrowdStreet .com transaction. They've done 7 transactions in the CrowdStreet arena. Well, that gives you a little bit of history that you can refer to. So, solid sponsor. How about, Dan, let's talk about this site-specific project, 401 units. Give us a little more information on that so people can understand what we're...
A significant thing I see on it is that it is a new project. You realize that, don't you?
Right. But,
yeah.
Right.
They're buying this thing, or they're building it. Let's call it at, as they say, bought out at $311,000 per unit, $121 million. I think that's a significant number. I guess Florida.
But that's in Royal Palm Beach, right?
Yeah.
I believe the area, so it's an upscale.
It's close to the water. It's in a really nice area of Florida, no doubt.
Yeah.
But they're coming out. They're selling this thing at $536,000 per unit. It's a break even. That's what they're projecting. I mean, it's
that's a crazy number when you think about what we're used to.
Yeah.
In Texas. But again, location, location, location. And this is clearly a Class A, obviously, a Class A opportunity. Now, Dan, I want to point something out. You know, you and I just assume this is the case, but, you know, I think somebody that's listening for the first time may be thinking about all the reasons why they could never invest in a transaction like this. Who's going to go get the debt? Who has the debt here, Dan? When's it going to close?
Closing in January.
Right. And do you think any of the investors, at least the 100,000 or 300,000 or whatever level, someone, I didn't notice what the minimum was to participate in this thing. It's probably a lot less than 100,000, I'm guessing, if it's a CrowdStreet deal. But the lenders or the sponsors already got the debt. You know, we don't have to go do things like that. What do you do if you want to go buy your own rental house? You got to go get a loan. And that's not to say you can't do it or you might have problems doing it. There's a lot of way to get or a lot of ways to get money for investment real estate. I'm just trying to point out, you don't have to get out of bed in the morning to do any of this stuff that's going on here, right? You're paying an override, a promote is what we call that, to the syndicator so that they can take care of all these development issues, leasing, getting the loan, getting the refinance, working on a sell someday. And just to give you some idea, Dan, did you notice the comment about how long it took to put the land deal together?
I didn't read that part of it. It's quite a chunk of land, 26 acres or so.
12 years. The land assemblies took course over a 12-year period by the best land assembler in the state of Florida. This is, from all appearances, a special transaction. And just real quick, the investment structure, $26 million in equity. There's a capital. The equity is, what, 14%, I guess, of the total overall capital. They've got a couple different internal rate of returns calculations, depending on whether someone's doing this more as a loan, like they just want a return, or whether they want some upside. But with profit participation, it's about a projected pro forma, roughly 20% internal rate of return, 16% without the profit participation, which you may decide that fits your objectives and your risk tolerance. The equity multiple year three is 1.67%. That's almost.
They're using that. That's their sale rate or sale year is 3 years of holding.
Yeah.
I think it's significant that they put in this opportunity listing. They're showing the cap rate from 6.69 down to 4.0%, in part of this. And that's, that's really transparent. You know, at five, that's the number where they're doing their big presentation. I guess that 1.67.
Yeah.
They said the cap rate, they projected could go as low as 4%, could go as high as 6.9.
Well, that's good that they're being transparent. Listen, we're at the end of the show again, Dan. It's hard to believe. It always comes so fast. And I'll just say that if you want our assistance in reviewing transactions, helping you understand the math as to why something might or might not be reasonable to assume, go to the beaplanner.com website. That's BEAPLANNER.com. Fill out our intake forms, schedule a call. We'll be happy to discuss your own specific objectives and resources and help you understand how we might sync up with your needs to help you make a move into this particular asset space. This is clearly where some great opportunities still exist, including the one that we just briefly went over. And obviously, we go into a lot more detail if you engage us. Okay, well, it's been great, Dan, having you once again. Thank you for getting up early. And
thank you. Happy New Year.
Well, same to you. And we'll be back next week, same time, same station, here on KSEV AM 700.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEB.